Welcome to Journeys to Orthodoxy, a production of the Icon New Media Network, where Orthodox Christianity is the future of American spirituality. Journeys to Orthodoxy can be heard on the Orthodox Christian Network at www.myocn.net. I'm your host, Jacob Lee.
This week on Journeys, Andrew Smith. Journeys to Orthodoxy. I'm your host, Jacob Lee. And on the line, I've got from Brisbane, Australia, Andrew. How are we doing, Andrew?
I'm doing good, Jacob. How are you doing?
Good. And down there, I believe you use the term surname for your last name?
Yes, that's it.
It's Andrew Smith.
That's me, yeah.
Yeah, in the States we call it a last name, and I'm sure the proper way to say it's a surname. So.
Yeah, it depends on where you live in the world, all that kind of thing.
Yep. And Andrew, you're a convert to the Eastern Orthodox Church?
Yes, as of about mid-2001 now.
Wow. So you've been a convert for 7 years.
Yeah. I had the anniversary of my chrismation a couple of weeks back. So
oh,
it's been about 6 years for that.
And so you've been in the game now for 7 years, so to speak?
Yeah.
And any regrets?
No. No, it's fulfilling. So where I want my life to be, no regret about that, you know.
And Andrew, let's start your journey with your childhood. How did you grow up? What were your parents? Baptists? What were they?
They didn't have a religion. Basically, my grandparents were Anglican or Episcopalian, and my parents were baptized and grew up and left their church, and I was brought up with freedom, but they were somewhere between deists and agnostics. So if God did exist, then he didn't have a role to play in our lives here.
Got it. And so that must have kind of made for an interesting childhood, being free to go to whatever you want or do whatever you want, but really no God in it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't miss something unless you had it first. So I didn't miss the concept. I did think about it from a fairly early age. I remember asking what the meaning of life was at 8, which I've been told since is rather unusual. But it's not something that God in particular wasn't something that I really thought about until after I finished primary school, so just hitting teenage years.
Wow. And how did you begin to form a desire for God? I mean, what was it that did it? Was there, a death, or is this, the Holy Spirit?
No, it just felt like something was missing. And that could have been, God's way of working. But the way that I felt it was that something was missing. And I came to the conclusion that that was God. That something had to fill what I would now call the God-shaped hole in the human heart. So I started believing in God when I was around 13.
And at 13, what kind of doors did you go knocking on to find God?
Not many. It was a personal belief. It didn't really have an effect on my life. It was kind of more God of the philosophers kind of deal. I wouldn't have expressed it like that then, of course. But that there was a God was a belief that I did have.
Got it. So you knew you had a God was out there, but you weren't sure who or what he was.
Yeah.
And then
exactly what I believed him to be at that time.
So where did you go from there? Where did your journey take you?
Well, it didn't really bother me again until just before I was 15, when I decided, you know, if God exists, and we're assuming that he does, then his religion has got to be around. And since God is, you know, omnipotent and all that, he's God and all, then he's got to, then he'll have kept his religion alive. So it will be a religion that's still going. So started searching from just before I was 15, and that went through until I was about 16 and a half. So that was my second last year of high school.
Okay, so at 16 and a half, you decided to take it to another level?
I found something different, which was orthodoxy. Before that, I'd been, you know, looking at the religions that my friends were involved in. I looked at Christianity early on and basically disregarded it because of the people that I saw. You know, and it sounds very harsh to say, but that's where I was. So I went through other religions, went through especially neo-paganism for a while, looked at others, and when I saw an internal contradiction, then I knew that that couldn't be God's religion. That God wouldn't make something that didn't make sense at some level, at least.
So how did, I mean, neo-paganism, how was that expressed? That's an interesting... Was it more of a head knowledge than a practice that you were going down studying it?
I definitely had knowledge. All of this was studying, you know, looking at the ideas, at the theology, at the concepts. I never saw or participated in any Wiccan rituals. I had bits and pieces of the jewelry, but that's about it. So, and that was the same for any of the religions that I looked at. I looked at it, looked at the intellectual side, and if that didn't fit, then I moved on.
So it was pretty much an intellectual journey that you went on.
Yeah.
So when did you discover Christianity?
Well, Christianity, of course, is a fairly pervasive thing in Western society. Mm-hmm. So in Queensland, the state where I live in Australia, we have what's called religious education, right of entry religious education. And that means that if there are children in the school that want to learn a particular religion, then the school is obliged to give, I think it's half an hour or an hour, to the study of, to have a religious representative teach that religion to those interested students.
Wow. So what religions did you see in that?
Generic Protestant Christianity. I know that the generic bit sounds bad, but it was designed to be an ecumenical endeavor so that everyone could participate.
Okay.
I'm not sure what denominations the local people belong to. You know, at a primary school level, there's a lot of common ground between the various Christian denominations, and you don't have to go into, the 1000s or the 1400s or anything like that.
Gotcha.
So I'd seen Protestantism and Catholicism before, but of course at that point Orthodoxy was strange crosses on the top in cemeteries, that kind of thing, and that's about it.
Got it. Now what? What led you to discover Orthodoxy then?
Well, it's a bit of a story. I was, as I said, looking for God's religion, and then it occurred to me that in Australia there's chaplains at various high schools, and my high school was one of the larger high schools in my city. So there was a chaplain there, and it occurred to me that, you know, he might have something to say about it. Even if he was from a religion that I'd previously rejected. He was a Protestant Christian. And spoke to him, and you know, basically he restored my faith in Christians. Yeah, he seemed like a decent person. He thought about things, did his honors in philosophy as well, which I have to respect. And Yeah, he helped me a lot on my journey, even after my conversion. And another influential thing was that at that time there was a person who had graduated from a theological college, and he was working there as an assistant chaplain, basically. He's since been ordained to the priesthood, actually. So I spoke to him and actually found out about Orthodoxy, and did research on my own, again continuing the intellectual exercise, and found that Orthodoxy was internally cohesive. So everything makes sense. If you accepted the premises, you could follow it to its conclusion, and it makes sense.
Got it. So give me an example for our listeners what you mean by that. What would be something that you could take from point A and take it all the way to Z, so to speak?
So long ago, I can barely remember what my...
Oh, no problem.
What the tipping point was. I remember reading a lot about the Great Schism, the East-West Schism, perhaps, and... you know, looking at the Orthodox view on it and going, yep, that makes sense, that makes sense, that makes sense. Okay, that all makes sense. I can see why that happened. The Ten Commandments was another page that I looked at. A lot of my research was done on the internet. So I looked at the Ten Commandments and went, yeah, that all makes sense. Looked at a lot of the quotes. There was one in particular that I remember. If you need 100 grams of bread and consume 110 grams, then you've stolen 10 grams of bread from the poor, which really hit a chord with me at the time. At this point, I remember what happened, but yeah, the details might just be beyond me at this point.
No, those are great. Those are great.
Yeah.
So
I'm finding that now the same thing applies with theosis. You accept the premises, then the conclusion is a lot easier to find as well.
So, explain that. Not all of our listeners will know what theosis is. So,
okay. Theosis is based on the verse in 2 Peter where we become partakers of the divine nature. And that means that we can have union with God. A lot of it comes from St. Athanasius's work in the 300s, if memory recalls, where God became man so that man might become divine and become adopted children of God by grace.
Yes, that's the whole idea of being sons of God. So
yeah,
you're inheritors of his energies, but not his essence.
Yeah, that's it.
So,
yeah,
I'm helping you out here.
Yeah. So once we've accepted that, you know, we can become one with God, then we can accept so many other things. Fasting, it isn't about the ritual of not eating cows or, you know, whatever. It's about the denial of the self so that we can become, you know, one with God again. And on it goes. It's difficult to tease apart one thing in particular, as you know, because everything is just so intricately connected.
Yeah, well, you know, Orthodoxy is called the fullness of the faith because it's a fullness, and it's hard to take apart one piece because you're right, it's all interconnected.
Yeah.
It's like removing a piece from the car, it won't run.
No.
So.
Exactly right.
Got it. So, when was the first time you entered into an Orthodox church? What was it like? I mean, you'd been journeying around a little bit, at least intellectually. Had you ever been to a service like it? Tell me that story.
Well, actually, we have those religious education classes, as I said, in my high school. You know, in my primary school, there were about 500 people, so, you know, you can just have the one religion there. But in my high school, there were 2,000 students between 13 and 17 years of age. So we were able to segregate according to religion. There were Hindu and Buddhist Hindu and Buddhist RE streams and Islam RE streams. And then you've got Catholic and Protestant and Orthodox RE streams. So I asked to be put into the Orthodox RE stream, which my parents were okay with, and started learning about Orthodoxy there. One of the excursions,
They basically allowed Orthodoxy to be taught in the public school there.
Yes, yes. To students whose parents want them to learn about Orthodoxy. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So there was an excursion, a field trip, I think it's called, and we went to a church on the Gold Coast, happens to be called St. Anna's, and we went there for their feast day. And I went in and, you know, saw what an Orthodox church was, and, you know, it's pretty impressive. And there were a lot of people who were venerating the icons, which at that time I didn't know how to do. I'd never walked into a church before. I knew that veneration happened, but that's about it. So I kind of went in the side and looked through a service that was done pretty well mostly in Greek. But one thing that really struck me about that service was the behavior of one of the old ladies there, who was doing, what are they called, metanias, reverences, touching the ground and crossing herself. And it just struck me that was so right. And the thought came to my mind completely unbidden, yes, I've chosen rightly, this is where I'm supposed to be, which was kind of a really fulfilling moment. So, yeah, that was my first experience, and we had lunch afterwards, and I got to talking with some of the other Orthodox people.
And yeah. So how did they accept you as an outsider into this kind of classroom setting? And then at the church, I mean, the other kids in the class must have known you weren't Orthodox.
Well, at that time, I decided that I was Orthodox and still hadn't talked to a priest or anything like that, or even gone to church on any kind of regular basis. But I decided to be there. Now we're all past that, but at the time I wasn't particularly friendly with most of the other people in my year levels class anyway. That wasn't a problem. I wasn't expecting that. And I had still yet to actually start attending church on any regular basis until the end of that year. The teachers really accepted me and helped me a lot on my journey. Sounds really harsh, but it was a lot of a cultural thing, and this is what we do at that point, which, you know, you can't expect considering the age group.
Got it. So how did you continue on your journey from going from class to inquirer to catechumen?
Continued going to the class, which essentially functioned as most of my catechism. And it took about until the November, around the end of the year, for me to actually start going to church and make a decision to go to church weekly. And at that point, I was very much welcomed by the community. And I feel like I'm not answering one of the questions that you asked.
Oh, no, it's fine. You became an inquirer then? You started regularly attending and became an inquirer in the parish?
Essentially. It wasn't anywhere near as standardized or as formalized, even as it is now, or certainly as it seems to be in America. I spoke to the priest a couple of weeks afterwards, who warmly received me welcomed me into the community, told me, gave me some things to read, that kind of thing. And I kept on going to my religious education classes, and that continued basically until I was received into the church the following year.
Okay. And what did your parents along this process think?
Sorry?
What did your parents think about you going to these Orthodox services on the weekends, on Sundays?
They were okay, yeah. And I went on, we have a liturgy in English on Saturday night, which is, you know, which I've considered my church home, essentially. It was where I started going to church. And, you know, even then, I was traveling into the city to attend the church, and, you know, they were okay with it. I was given a lot of freedom to find out if this was really right. Yeah. Obviously, you know, their parents, they're cautious of these things, but they did give me a lot of freedom to explore it.
Now, did your parents ever go with you to check out this Orthodox church?
Once they did, and, you know, went inside, saw it was okay, got to understand a bit more of it, talked to the priest, that kind of thing. And they also went to my chrismation the next year. Okay. That was really nice.
What did they think about the Orthodox Church? Now, the reason I asked, my dad grew up Episcopal, and he feels that it's very similar to his upbringing.
They've accepted that's something that I do. They're not looking to make any kind of step themselves, as far as I know. But they're accepting of that this is something that I do. Which is difficult when you spring fasting on them and they're, you know, still cooking your meals and things like that. And looking back, they were very understanding of those kind of things. They saw that it seemed to help me, and they were okay with that.
Good. And when you converted, were you baptized, chrismated?
I was chrismated. My grandmother had ensured that I was baptized in the Anglican Church, which was her church. And so that was the baptism already done, and then I was chrismated into the church. And that was a year after I started going to church, so 18 months after I intellectually converted.
Got it. And what day was that?
14th of November.
So not quite St. Andrew's Day.
No. It was actually the day before my high school graduation, which was something that I really liked. Especially we've got a bit of a, suppose it's a rite of passage called schoolies, which is something like Cancun, I imagine, for college-age students, but school leavers will go to the Gold Coast or some kind of coastal area and celebrate their absence from school, I suppose. And it was really nice that I was received just before, you know, I went into that minefield.
Got it.
That was really nice.
And so you were received into the church, and you took on the name Andrew, which was your birth name?
I was born with Andrew, yes. It's a good name. It's an apostle's name, so, yeah.
The first called.
Yeah.
My priest name.
Good name to it.
Yeah. My priest name is Andrew as well, so.
Okay, yeah.
It's a excellent. Name. Good name to have. Now, where did you, so from high school into college, you've now become Orthodox.
Yeah.
Or what do you call college in?
University.
University, okay. So in university, you've become Orthodox. How does that play out?
It's not too bad. It didn't come up, certainly not as much as it seems to, for others. I've been listening to some of the podcasts from OCF, and it seems to come up a lot more there than it did for me personally. Mainly because a big difference between America and Australia is that we usually they live in at home or in our own accommodation. We don't have the college dormitory living so much. So things could mostly go as normal, just studying at a different place.
So it's basically kind of being like at high school.
Kind of, yeah. Same kind of lectures and tutorials set up, but I was still living at home until I finished university, my bachelor degree.
Got it. Now, did you share your Orthodox faith with anybody, what happened with your faith?
I was always open about it. Wore a prayer rope around my wrist, that kind of thing. If anyone asked, then I'd tell them straight up. Tell as much as I felt that they wanted to listen to. You can't be too pushy either. So it was always interesting trying to strike the right kind of balance.
So how has your life changed since you've become Orthodox? What's different about you? What would your friends, what would your family say?
In some ways, it's really hard to say because, I converted at precisely the time when, everyone's changing. So you could say it was the religion. You could say that, it's because I was growing up. There's, a lot of intangibilities, I think it is. A lot of variables in the situation. But a lot of people who knew me beforehand and knew me afterwards have said that, there's a definite change there. According to them, I'm a lot more centered and grounded, that kind of thing. It's always difficult for someone to speak about themselves in any real kind of manner.
Now, Andrew, my understanding is that you are a reader in the Orthodox Church?
No, just a chanter.
A chanter, sorry.
Yeah, entirely unordained.
You chant in both Greek and English?
Yeah. Whatever.
How did that come about?
The chanting lessons. I was asked if I wanted to do chanting. I went, sure. And the chanting lessons were done by a priest who made sure that we learned how to read Greek as part of learning Byzantine music. So I'm able to read Byzantine music, all those, hooks and squiggles and such, and to chant in Greek or in English.
Wow.
Depending on the need of the congregation, yeah.
I can't chant to save my life, so I'm just a plain, flat chanter, I'm that guy who's doing tone 8 when everybody else is doing tone 1. So, anyhow, it's my Achilles heel. So, I know that you're up to some groundbreaking Orthodox evangelism, so to speak, in Australia?
As far as Australia goes, yeah. We've got this event coming up. It's called Easter Fest. It used to be called AGMF, the Australian Gospel Music Festival. And it's, as far as I know, Australia's number one, gospel music event in Australia. So all kinds of Christian bands, come along and...
So stuff like Hillsong?
Not so much. Hillsong is at church in Sydney. But the kind of bands that would be at Hillsong, yeah.
Okay. Well, they have like Hillsong worship CDs that are fairly popular.
Yeah. I think they've made compilations of various bands. But, I could be wrong there.
So they're going to have a big music fest. What other kind of bands are going to be there besides worship bands?
Lost me there. I honestly haven't looked at the band list. One of the members of our group is playing there, and kind of embarrassed to say that I've never actually found out the name of his band either, so I can't give it a plug.
Well, it's was it Tom Jangles, is that correct?
That's him, yes.
And you guys, so you guys are going to go to this Christian rock music fest gospel event?
Yeah. What we've done is able to set up a stall there So we'll be selling books, T-shirts, and generally if anyone wants to know about Orthodoxy, then we'll be able to answer any questions that people may have. Yeah. The focus is very much on information and, you know, just getting the word out that we do exist.
Got it.
And we're not just a funny building on the corner, that kind of thing.
So who's all involved in this?
We've got four people from our parish, one Cradle Orthodox, and three converts, including myself, including Tom, of course.
And are you guys having any priests or deacons or anybody, or just laymen?
We're not able to, sadly. The Western Easter is going to be is on the weekend when we celebrate Palm Sunday, which, as most clergy know, is a very busy weekend.
Yeah.
So you get Lazarus Saturday and Palm Sunday and the myriad other services that just go with being Lent. So, yeah, we're going to have to be up there during, you know, Palm Sunday even. So may have to do our own, you know, lay services up there without clergy being there.
Now, is this a fairly big deal for Australian Christians, this music fest or whatever it is?
As far as I know, it's the biggest one. So I'm fairly sure it's pretty big in, you know, Eastern evangelical Pentecostal circles. Although apparently all denominations will attend freely, targeted for the youth market, 18 to 35, I think. So it's a big event. Held in Toowoomba, if memory recalls, which is just west of Brisbane.
So you're going to make like a sign or wear T-shirts that say Easter's next week?
Cross our minds.
I mean, it's kind of a perfect opportunity. You have everybody there, you know, just to let you know Easter's not till. No.
I'm sure that putting the Easter in Easton would cross our minds as well. there's a few that we're running with.
You could get real creative with that.
Yeah, yeah. talk about, you know, what's the festival, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
So, and I believe you were inspired by some participants in some of the other podcasts I do?
Yeah, yeah. The Death to the World group, as obviously you know, do a stall at Cornerstone, which, you know, from what I can gather, we're trying to do something fairly similar to what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a great way to get Orthodoxy out. And I know from talking with them that their success has gone up as the years have gone on.
Yeah.
Meaning that the first time they did it, they didn't have a lot of good response. But since they've been there for year after year after year, people start seeing them. And then they kind of become a fixture that makes them more and more accessible. Every year they get more and more people interested that had seen them the year before. So, you know.
Well, yeah, it makes it look less like a flash in the pan kind of thing, that it's, you know, consistent, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I can understand that, even if it's going to mean, you know, maybe we won't be the outstanding success we'd like this year. We can look forward to, you know, having more information and such next year.
So, you know, just some general questions while we're talking. How is the Orthodox Church in Australia? Is it growing?
The way that I usually describe it is that it's about 20 years behind America. So, you know, you get different parishes that are doing, you know, different things. Some are, I think the term is more on the side of an ethnic chaplaincy. There are various, for lack of a better word, old world cultures, and, you know, people need to be cared for. There are places where parishes are entirely English language, especially the major centres, Sydney and Melbourne. It's difficult to say one answer for an entire continent, you know.
You guys just aren't a country, you're a continent, aren't you?
Well, both, yeah. World's largest island, I think, as well. So, yeah, it's it's difficult to say whether it's growing or shrinking, you know. Obviously, there is a element where most religions are experiencing a downturn of some sort, you know, because of the aging population, that kind of thing.
Because, you know, Orthodoxy in this country is one of the, I don't know if it's the fastest growing, but it's an extremely fast growing Christian group. The only problem is it's, how do I want to say this?
It's measured in terms of percentage.
Yeah. It's measured in percentage. I mean, we're still not large numbers here either. So, but you know, every week at our parish, and I know other parishes have people coming in every week. So
Which, you know, that's really exciting. And if we are 20 years behind America, then, you know, I'm looking forward to the next 10 years. Because it's going to be a great thing for Australia as well.
Yep. Can you hold one moment? My apologies here.
Yeah, no worries.
There was a call that just came in. It might be my wife, might be important. She texted me to call her. So, Andrew, what does the future have in store for you?
At the moment, I'm concentrating on finishing off my my education diploma so that, you know, I can be a teacher and you know, have that to look forward to. I'm also finishing up the St. Stephen's course. I'm about halfway through now. After I graduate in June, then, you know, there'll be more definite things on that. But as long as I can, you know, continue living the faith that I've been given, then, you know, I'm going to be really happy with that.
Good. And what would you, in closing here, how would you encourage our listeners who aren't Orthodox, they're sitting on the sidelines? What would you say to them?
Go. Yeah, this is, Orthodoxy has been one of the fulfilling parts of my life. It's brought me together with myself and into, you know, a kind of interconnectedness with the world, because, you know, we're all human, and there's a great solidarity and interconnectivity with that, and it's been my experience that Orthodoxy is the best way to experience that, to experience a love of God and a love for each other, and to express our love for God in our love for each other.
So, wonderful.
That's what I would say.
Well, yeah. I appreciate your time, Andrew, and look forward to seeing what all you guys run into when you do your booth down there at Easterfest. And
we'll be sure to keep you updated.
Yeah, we'll have to bring you back on to one show or another and update people on what happened.
yeah, absolutely.
So, anyhow, Andrew, thanks for joining us today on Journeys to Orthodoxy, and you have a great day.
I shall. You
happy
too.
Feast day, as it's.
And to you, happy feast.
Happy feast.
Thank you for listening to Journeys to Orthodoxy, a production of the Icon New Media Network, where Orthodox Christianity is the future of American spirituality. Would you like to share your journey with us? Please do so by contacting us at journeys@iconnewmedianetwork.com. Journeys to Orthodoxy can be heard on the Orthodox Christian Network at www.myocn.net.